From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. In a moment, UFOs over Washington, D.C., and next hour, mind control with Sonia Barrett. But here's what's happening. While a number of places around this country now are being sprayed by plane because of the possibility of West Nile virus from mosquitoes. As a matter of fact, the mayor of Dallas has declared a state of emergency in the ninth largest U.S. city to combat the spread of West Nile virus infections, which have been more prevalent than usual in Texas and other states this year. There have been more cases of West Nile virus reported so far this year than any year since this disease was first detected in the United States back in 1999. The emergency declaration by Mayor Mike Rawlings followed a similar action last week by Dallas County officials and paves the way for aerial pesticide spraying. They're sending notices out to people saying, close your windows, take your pets in. So it's not a healthy situation. Aerial spraying also being used elsewhere. Neighborhoods in New York City, Sacramento, California, Illinois. It's happening all over the place. AccuWeather calling for a very snowy winter this year. Cities from Baltimore to New York, they say, could be in for a snowy winter. The Weather Service's winter 2012-13 forecast calls for cold weather and large systems of moisture to converge, dumping above-average snow totals along the East Coast. The timing, they say, January and Feb. Mitch Batras, of course, EarthChangesMedia.com is with us. Mitch, let me ask you something. How bad do you think it's going to get?
I think they're wrong, George. What they're basing it on is on El Nino and La Nina, and now most of us know, especially those that listen to your show, know that El Nino and La Nina are just the cute Peruvian fisherman names for shifting ocean and jet stream currents.
That's right.
So we look beyond that and say, well, what is the cause of this shifting of ocean and jet stream currents? Well, we know the sun certainly plays a major role, especially with the jet stream. We know our magnetic field is weakening daily, and we also now know that we are in the last small percentage of a few thousand year process of a pole reversal. What that indicates is that the oceans are more likely to continue to be warm. What they're suggesting, AccuWeather people, is that the oceans, especially the Pacific, as far as the equatorial, that it will be a moderate to a weak warming of the oceans.
Mm-hmm.
I totally disagree. All the evidence is showing that submarine volcanoes, undersea volcanoes, are wreaking havoc.
That's like a slow boil, isn't it?
Well, that's right. That's exactly right. So it is heating the oceans, specifically the Pacific. The most active region right now is near New Zealand, which is of course part of the Pacific, and it's going to continue to heat the oceans. This is part of the precursors to the pole reversal. It take too long in a news brief section segment to go over it.
Well, Mitch, let me also ask you, why does it seem that when we have a really hot summer, we have a really brutal winter?
That's not always the case. You know what? It probably feels that way because it was so damn hot during the summer. So when cooler weather comes, it feels it. But if you look at the records, it's not always the case. And what they're finding now, and matter of fact, and I know some of these guys over there at AccuWeather, they're cool. But, you know, this is their statement, and I'm really pleased that they made it. Quote, our team of winter weather experts at the Capitol, they call themselves the Capitol Weather Gang, suggest AccuWeather's forecast amounts to a speculative guess and are as likely to be wrong as they are right. I understand what they're doing. I mean, their body of information, their data is sound. I think it's their reading of the data. I disagree with it. I think it's going to be the water's going to continue to warm, and so I don't expect that there will be a weak El Nino. I think it's going to be rather significant.
Well, we will see, Mitch. One of you will be right, no doubt about that, and it's going to come up sooner than we think. The Social Security Administration has posted a blog to explain why it is planning to purchase 174,000 hollow point bullets. This has been a major story going all over the internet. The blog states that the SSA has 295 special agents who work in 66 offices all across the United States. These investigators, they say, have full law enforcement authority, including executing search warrants and making arrests, according to their blog. The investigators are similar to state or local police officers. They use traditional investigative techniques, and they are armed when on official duty. Social Security Administration planning to buy 174,000 hollow point bullets. That's still a lot of bullets. Facebook's life as a public company has been a nightmare from day one, and the pain continues as some company insiders now got their very first chance to dump shares. Facebook stock hit a new day low of 1969 and then ended the day 6.3% lower at $19.87. The man who watches the internet for us, Loren Weinstein. Boy, they've just lost confidence in Facebook, Loren.
Yeah, I think what's happened now is there's been a confluence of several things happening at once. And as you were saying, today was the, they have a staggered system. So this was the first of the IPO lockouts that have ended. So that let some of the very early investors, this is mainly the venture capitalists, banks and such, they can now dump some of those early shares, and it appears that they did. Now, the thing is, this is, like I said, this is staggered, so there's going to be more of these coming. I think the next one is in November. That's one thing that happened. Another thing that happened, and I think this is less significant in terms of what happened today, but it may be more significant in the long run, is that more countries are reopening or opening investigations into Facebook. In fact, Germany just announced that it's reopening an investigation because they're unsatisfied with the way Facebook has responded to German and EU concerns about Facebook's massive, massive photo database, face recognition database. And Germany is taking the view that the way Facebook is handling this in terms of opt-in and opt-out violates German law and possibly EU law. So there's all those happening. And another thing that's going on, and I think it's impossible to dismiss this, is there are concerns now that there is a sort of brain drain occurring at Facebook at high levels.
Yeah.
They lost four major executives in 1 week, just a few days, just really a few days ago. And obviously those positions will be filled. But there's a sense that people that were feeling very up about Facebook in terms of going there to work and the stock opportunities and the money opportunities and the work opportunities aren't feeling that way now. How low will the Facebook stock go? No one can say. Luckily, it can't go negative.
Lauren, let me ask you this. Facebook right now is sitting on $10 billion in cash.
Right.
It was making money when it was private. Why did they take it public in the first place?
Well, that's a question. That's the question a lot of people ask. The most obvious answer to it that anyone could come up with is, who's not an insider, is that they wanted to get this on the track to really explode. You think back to when the IPO, the lead into the IPO, and everyone was talking about a gigantic, burst in the price. They were talking about it being a tremendous increase. And when it didn't happen for a variety of reasons, including, I think it could be argued the mismanagement of NASDAQ in the actual process of the IPO, that just kind of was like a snowball starting to go down a mountain. And once you lose confidence like that, it's very, very hard to get it back. So what will happen now is very hard to say. In the long run, you have to assume that Facebook is going to find its niche. There's a lot of very smart people there. Like you say, they have a lot of cash. They have enormous resources. But right now, it's very, very difficult. And I think some people who have invested money in this who didn't have a lot to spend in the first place are probably feeling pretty scared.
Always good to get your feedback on these stories, Loren. I'm going to move a desk for you here at Coast to Coast AM. We've been calling you so often, but it just seems like there's always an internet story coming up that we need your expertise. Thousands of people converged on Graceland to mark the 35th anniversary of Elvis Presley's death and got a surprise welcome from the King's former wife and daughter. The first time Priscilla and Lisa Marie Presley have appeared together at the annual gathering. The rock and roll icon died at his home in 1977 from a heart attack after battling prescription drug abuse. Fans held up and lit candles, illuminating their faces in orange light as they stood in the street outside of the gates of Graceland in Memphis, Elvis's longtime home and his burial place. At Eva, which is a restaurant in Los Angeles, diners who give up their cell phones for the duration of the meal will get a 5% discount. A lot of restaurateurs are just tired of all the cell phone clamoring and noise, so they're starting to give people a little deal. There's been a lot of talk of UFOs all over the place. Washington, the state of Washington, D.C. as well. Let's check in first with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Peter, what are you hearing these days?
Yeah, when your trusty assistant and the engineer, Tom, called tonight to ask about sightings in Washington, I thought he was talking about Washington State because we had three or four really very, very interesting sightings up here, not far from where I reside, George. But just before the program, when I realized he was talking about Washington, D.C., I went to our database and all the latest reports. The most recent report we've gotten from Washington, D.C. was the 6th of August. That's almost deep history in the field of ufology. But a lot of people seem to think that Washington, D.C. would be a hot spot, so-called, for UFO activity, because obviously it's the seat of our government,
sure,
and that's where UFOs would go. Well, if they're smart, they probably would not. That's my political attitude on the matter, but I don't see any special activity in the Washington, D.C. or Virginia area at all, George.
Now, back to Washington State, I'm getting a lot of reports about Yakima, Washington sightings. Are you?
We get a few. I haven't seen a pulse of sightings from Yakima. I was just a moment ago alluding to a number of sightings in Omak, Okanagan, and it appears the same things that were seen in those two cities just west of where I'm located were seen over Leavenworth, Washington, about 6 minutes later. And that's what I thought Tom was alluding to when he first called. But I don't see any special activity in the Washington, D.C. area. In the past, I've gotten a lot of photographs from there, but in my opinion, the overwhelming majority of those photos are of strobe lights of aircraft landing at National Airport. So I don't see any special activity over our capital city.
Okay, thanks, Peter. Appreciate it. Up next, though, we talk about covert encounters in Washington, D.C. Robert Stanley joins us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Now you're going to get a different view over what might be happening over the skies of Washington, D.C. Robert Stanley with us, former corporate journalist, and he is currently the editor of Unicus magazine. He has researched UFOs for more than 30 years. In that time, he's interviewed dozens of eyewitnesses, several books out there, Close Encounters on Capitol Hill, Covert Encounters in Washington, D.C. as well. Here's Robert Stanley for the hour here on Coast to Coast. Robert, always a pleasure. How are you?
Doing well, George. How are you?
Good, good. Now, Peter says that he's not getting a lot of reports. You, on the other hand, say we've had at least 30-plus this year alone.
Yes, and there's very good photographs and video of that. It's not airplanes, clearly not airplanes. In fact, one of the reports actually comes from an airline pilot that's living in Washington, D.C., and he would obviously know what air traffic looks like. So his report was very compelling. It's not the kind of thing he normally does, but obviously he was concerned that this kind of activity was going on in the controlled airspace over D.C.
What do you think is happening, Robert?
Could you ask me that again?
Well, what do you think? I mean, what does your gut tell you with all these sightings? What's going on?
Yeah, what is going on is that, gosh, this sounds so crazy. There has to be some sort of interdimensional portal or a base of operations there underground in D.C. because they're coming there so frequently. I mean, you know, it was even in the Huffington Post that the number of UFO sightings around the world has increased dramatically this year.
Right.
So it really should be no surprise that, you know, we have this many, over 30 reported UFO incidences in Washington, D.C. this year alone. I kind of think the number's higher and a lot of people don't report it. But this is not unprecedented, as I reported in my second book, covert encounters in Washington, D.C., we typically are seeing, 50 or more reports a year. There was 80-something in the year 1952. Some people say that there could have been a couple thousand, but that's all classified. So, unfortunately, the public is really the last to know. But I think you've asked me this before, and I really don't give you a clear answer because I'm not in a position to know what the heck is the agenda here. Whatever it is, though, it is covert.
Well, and that's always the puzzled question for people. What is going on? Why are they coming here, if they're coming here? And why do they pick these selective areas in order to do what they do? Washington, of course, being the power base. I would think that they would want to monitor what's going on over Washington, D.C.
Well, either that or, as I've said to you before, I really think that there's a possibility that they are manipulating the minds of certain key individuals who work there. I mean, it's far easier than simply invading us and taking over in that regard if they are so superior. Now, obviously, I'm talking about malevolent extraterrestrials,
sure,
if they exist, and I kind of believe they do. I mean, based on my research, which, again, I report, the second half of the conclusion is all stuff I took right out of the public record of what the military knows about those who might have ill intent towards us from other worlds. I mean, it's there in the public record. Surprising as that may seem, it's just that few people have ever taken the time to ever really pull it all together into a timeline. The way I do my work, I tend to want to pull things into timelines. So it reads a little more succinctly as far as, it establishes some sort of pattern of behavior, both good and bad. I mean, clearly, this isn't just a one-way street. I'm not trying to make it out like they're all bad.
Well, regardless of, their technology and how they've evolved, people, yeah, I think, tend to make a mistake here, Robert, where they say, just because you reach this level of excellence in technology,
right,
doesn't mean you're going to be a good person or a good entity or whatever they are.
Clearly not. Well, the thing that concerns me, George, is that this is going on covertly and has been for a long time. I mean, at least since 1850, according to the public record. We've been seeing weird things, and people have been reporting weird things in Washington, D.C. since 1850 to the present. And the reason I'm concerned is that it isn't going to stop. Clearly, based on I kind of thought I was done last year with this, but I started looking at some recent photographs and video, and it really hit me like, oh my God. People do not have any idea. If I don't keep reporting on this, people are have no idea
right,
what's really going on in Washington, D.C. And it is covert, but people see it and they report it out. And the thing is, there isn't one central place. Peter's got his, MUFON's got theirs, but I use all the databases, as well as sometimes people just send me stuff out of the blue. And by putting it all together in a timeline, like it happened on January 1st, and then it was 5 days later, and then 10 days later, you start to see, wait a minute, this is really freaky.
Yeah, it's too strange. Why did you key in on the Washington, D.C. area as opposed to some other region?
It was the photographs.
Okay.
It was actually Daryl Sims forwarded me a photograph that Mr. Allen had taken July 16th, 2002. And I couldn't understand how come I had never heard about this. If it really happened, why 3 years later, as an investigator, I hadn't heard one word about it. That made me curious. So I, after interviewing Mr. Allen at some length and realizing he was telling the truth and then authenticating the photographs that he took at the Capitol that night of these objects, I started to investigate. Okay, and then I found dozens and then hundreds of cases, and it made me feel motivated to do that first book that you were kind enough to have me on in December 2006 about. And then last year I did an updated version with, God, there's over 900 reports in that book.
Isn't that amazing?
But they keep going, George. See, that's why I'm still motivated to tell people, hey, we got a problem, because it isn't stopping, and I don't think it's ever going to stop or Here's the thing. I just think that the American public needs to know.
Hold on for a second. That's a great place for us to take this break, Robert. We'll come right back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Plus, we'll take some phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Robert, before we go to phone calls, you were into something there. Did you want to finish that?
Well, you know, it's just that the photographs that Mr. Allen took in 2002, he's still taking these pictures here 10 years later, okay? And the pictures he took, the video he captured at the Washington Monument July 4th of this year, 2012, are identical to what was captured in July of 1952. So they haven't gone anywhere, okay? The level of activity is consistent. And by the way, if people want to see my report on the UFO activity in Washington, D.C. for 2012, you need to go to unicusmagazine.com, click on articles, and the first link there, Covert Alien Activity in Washington, D.C. 2012, it'll take you there. Look for yourself. See what's going on in the nation's capital.
Great. We've got that link for you, Robert.
Thank you.
Now, in the more than 30 years that you've investigated UFOs,
Yeah. Well,
first of all, let me ask you, how did you get into that? What was there one episode, one case that drew you into it?
No. Well, I was seeing things around where I grew up in Malibu and that I found to be rather curious. My father had a photograph in his study that of a UFO that apparently the photographer didn't see, and yet it showed up on the film. So that kind of drew me in as a young person. But no, I had close encounters in Malibu, and then when I moved to Santa Monica, that continued. And so I was really curious, you know, and of course there's a huge body of literature. So I really got started on this because I just was curious what was going on around me, but I couldn't help myself. I got drawn into it, and I had no intention of investigating Washington, D.C. That just happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it's at this point I can't extricate myself even if I wanted to. I'm stuck with that. It's part of my legacy.
Is it somewhat frustrating for you? It is for me. We've been investigating these cases for years,
yep,
and we still don't have that answer. You know why? We don't.
No, we don't. But it's important to at least have a dialogue that something is going on, that we need to pay attention to this. I don't think it's utterly benign. You know, obviously they haven't annihilated us, but at the same time, it doesn't mean that they're all benevolent either. So it's just something we need to pay attention to, and especially the fact that it's going on in the nation's capital should really concern people.
All right, let's go to the phones now. First-time caller, Al in Denver, Colorado. Go ahead, Al. Thanks for calling.
Hey, George. I'm listening to all these UFO sightings, and have you heard of the three possibilities of life and how it originated on Earth? And this has to do with UFOs. One is litho, the other is biogenesis, and the other, panspermia?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, well, why not? Why not the panspermia? The biogenesis, you know, you're going to come out of a dead swamp where there's no life at all. I don't go for that one too much. And, of course, the other litho is the God-created life and all that. But the panspermia, of course, is the we're trying to plant life on other planets now or looking for other places for us to live.
Well, but when you say panspermia, are you talking about we were seeded by, let's say, comets or extraterrestrials?
ETs.
Okay.
Extraterrestrials, yes. And, you know, we see these, we've heard about he was talking about sightings back in 1800s and before that. Heck, even some of the famous artists shows a UFO shining down in Bethlehem there. And when we talk about the speed of light, or, you know, we're traveling at the speed of light or whatever, if we travel away for a day and come back to Earth, it's already 1,000 years or several hundred years have passed. So why not every 100 years or so, one of these guys coming back and check and see how we're doing, and maybe that's what we're seeing now.
Robert, what do you think?
Well, as I said, they're coming to Washington, D.C. every week practically now. So that I don't know if that's really the case. I do think we're all related, though. That much is certain in my mind, that all life comes from the same source. I still don't know exactly where that is, but I'm sure we'll find out at some point.
I was asked the question today if I believe again in life after death, and of course my answer is always yes.
Yes.
With a little pause, because the pause, I think all of us, it's very natural for to doubt every once in a while, because, you know, it's just very difficult when you're not on the other side to just say, yeah, sure, it's there. But then when you start to try to analyze everything that's in this universe, the possibility of life out there, why we're even here as human beings, you've got to come up with a conclusion that there's something more to this life than what we know. And,
yes, absolutely.
You know, and I say the same for extraterrestrials and ET visitations. I mean, we cannot assume we're the only ones in this universe.
Not only that, if they're observing us, even just by the simple passive act of observation, we know from the slit experiment with light that the observer does affect the outcome. So they simply by observing us, they are having an effect on us, on our evolution.
Absolutely. All right, next up we go to Francine, Salt Lake City, Utah, west of the Rockies. Hi, Francine.
Hi, George. Glad to be on here. I've just been listening to your program for a year now, but my son's been an avid listener for a long time. My question is when you're keeping track of these UFOs, is there a certain style of UFO that is being seen right now? Because we go out every night with our dogs, and at 10:31 every night, almost every night, at least 2 to 3 times a week, we see this craft that looks just like a V goes flying past.
How big?
Almost like clouds.
How big, Francine? Like huge or a football field, smaller?
It's pretty big. It's pretty big, and it's low, and it goes across our flight pattern every time. There's no noise. There's no light, nothing, and it just goes across. And we also seen the orange one that evolved into a shape.
Robert, what kind of reports do we get in the Washington, D.C. area with craft, much like what Francine has seen?
Not so much occasionally you see the V-shaped ones, but a lot of times there's disks as well as the spheres. Most of them are spherical in nature, and like I said, you can see the actual video and the photographs of them. I'll tell you this much, too. Photography being what it is, it's actually improved quite a bit. And some of these pictures you can actually see through the energy field around the craft. So in other words, it looks like a sphere at one point, but when you actually analyze the film and move in on it, it's a disc-shaped object. So there's a little confusion. Sometimes the energy field will tend to distort what the craft actually looks like.
Okay, let's go next to the Big Island of Hawaii. Kahana's with us. Hello, Kahana. Thanks for calling.
Well, nice to be here. Thanks for this interesting
show. Sure thing. How close are you to Kona, by the way?
I just drove out of Kona, and I'm right at Pu'uva'ava'a, headed home to Kohala.
I should have you go there and deliver some supplies to our studio there.
Absolutely.
We got it up there.
And send me an email or let me know how I can help.
Okay, you got it. Go ahead.
When I knew I was moving here, I'd never been on the Eastern Seaboard, so I took a road trip, and I ended up spending 6 or 8 hours driving around Washington, D.C., taking hundreds of photos with my brand-new Nikon D80 digital camera. And, you know, I've been in a lot of big cities at night, Chicago, L.A., on and on. I've never seen a big city so deserted. And I had just visited the Greenbrier Hotel, which used to have total top secret about their underground facility, but now you can go on a tour of it because
they
moved everything to Denver. So kind of maybe underground was on my mind, but I have to say there were all kinds of blowers and lights and grates, and there just a huge feeling that I had and saw sensory things with my eyes and heard with my ears that there was stuff underground. And I wasn't yet a coast listener, not till I got over here and, you know, a few months or so later. And I'm thinking now to go back to look at those photos and see if I can see anything that I might have accidentally photographed that would be really cool. But just putting it out there, if you drive around D.C. at night, you might not see any people, but you'll see underground evidences.
Well, yeah, there's definitely a huge underground complex that is modern, but the rumors are that even before they built the city, there was ancient
tunnels in that area. And I really, we have no idea who built them or why.
Well, that's another mystery. And
it
there's millions of them.
Pardon?
There are millions of mysteries out
there. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right, next up, let's go to Jack, truck driving in Wyoming. Thanks for calling. Jack, you're up on the air with us.
I'm so glad I got through. I grew up in the Washington, D.C. area. I was actually born in Bethesda, Maryland, a stone's throw from, I guess, the Capitol and the White House.
Yep.
And, well, when I was a child, it was about 1976, 1977, I had an encounter where I remember sitting on the floor and I was playing as a child, and an apparition of a green alien came out of the ceiling where I was playing, just to observe me, just look at me.
Whoa.
And okay, that's strange enough, but the kicker is, years later, when I met the woman who was going to be my wife, she also grew up in the same area outside of Washington, D.C. And I told her my story, and she immediately, without thinking at all, told me that happened to me too when I was a kid.
Whoa.
Yeah, and it was like, it's going to sound funny, but the little kazoo character from the Flintstones.
Yeah.
Okay, I know. And you're saying, well, it's a kid. He probably got it from the TV or whatever. And I'm not convinced that maybe I didn't get it from the TV or whatever. But to me, it seemed like a real event. This, whatever it was a green alien apparition. I could see through it. I could see what was behind it.
Uh-huh.
And it was observing me. And somehow, on a telepathic level, it was connecting with me, letting me know that, yes, this is a strange experience, but it's okay. But the real kicker came when my future wife, we were dating at the time, and I just told her the story.
Right.
And, you know, we were young. We were 19 or 20 years old, and this is something that I shared with her. And she immediately said, well, that happened to me when I was a little girl. I saw the same thing. And it was in the Washington, D.C. area. And, I've heard other stories about UFOs in that area. My mom grew up around the Washington, D.C. area.
Yeah.
She has heard stories. You're right. There's definitely something there. And, I've had experiences. Nothing, that's never happened to me again. But just other types of things, you know, in my life from growing up around there.
Yeah.
But that was just, you know, I've never heard anybody on Coast talk about a green apparition type. The only thing I can say was alien, because it's the only way my mind can say what it was.
No, I understand. I don't think we've ever gotten that. We've got reptilian and everything else, but we have gotten the praying mantis type reports, though. And I would assume they're green. So you never know. Robert, the pilots and police officers generally will give you the best reports.
Yes.
Are we still getting them?
Let's see. You mean in Washington, D.C. or just in general?
In general.
No. In general, I think that has dropped off considerably. Look, these people have a profession to protect, and as well as a reputation, and they don't like to be ridiculed or dismissed, because, you know, that can happen. In fact, I was surprised to see that. I think if you couldn't do it, these days you can do it anonymously, like the pilot in Washington, D.C. He didn't have to give his name or what company he worked for, so it was somewhat safe for him. But generally speaking, no, the police, they see things. I know they do, but they're not. Well, here's the thing. You know, how many reports do we need before we start to say, wow, there's something going on? I think we've got more than enough. The next step is to do something. I'm still not sure what it is. I'm open. If anybody has any ideas, I am. I'm all ears. I'd like to know what we should, could, and would do if we're faced with these entities. At some point, we got to stop ignoring them and actually, you know, consciously acknowledge their existence and interact with them.
Well, what if they have superior technology, which I'm sure they do, and there's nothing we can do to stop them? And then we find out, as David Jacobs has reported and others, that their plans aren't that friendly.
Okay, but I would still, and I hear you, that's a possibility, but I still think we're better off knowing as opposed to simply living in denial and these things going on behind our back. That leaves us, I think we're even more vulnerable to manipulation if we continue on the path that we're on.
You think people would rather know they're being abducted rather than just to put their heads in the sand?
I can't speak for everybody. I can only speak for myself, but I can tell you this much. 10 days ago, there was alien technology out in front of my house. It wasn't there very long, but I looked up on the database there, the Peter Davenport's website. Apparently, other people in my area are seeing the same thing in the last couple of months. So I know they're out there, and they're, like this gentleman said, they're observing us. Sometimes they do more than observe us. But it's incumbent upon us, I think, to really make some kind of gesture. I have found in my own life that if you actually engage them, they will reciprocate. And so far, it hasn't harmed me too much. I mean, it's shocking. It really is. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's always shocking when you interact with something like that, completely unknown. Sure. But we can't just keep sitting here and going, oh wow, there's another report and another report and another report. At some point, we have to act upon the information.
So true. Let's go to Big Rapids, Michigan. Hi, Pamela. Go ahead.
Hello. How are you?
Good.
I'm so glad to get through. I've tried for 3 years, and I just want to say I really thank you for what you do, George, because there's just nowhere else most of us can turn.
Well, that is true. Thanks, Pamela. You're welcome.
Well, I'm calling because the last few years I've had quite a number of interesting things that I've seen, and prior to that, I truly never, ever believed that, I believe that most likely in this huge universe there were other beings on planets, but I never believed they were coming here. And then I was relating some odd stories from my past, and people were telling me, oh my gosh, you've been abducted by aliens. I'm like, no, I haven't. What are you talking about? You know, and I still don't know about any abduction thing. But I have the last few years been seeing, I see more things than I could ever relate on the show. However, last summer I was seeing ships that were like multi-sided, like 12-sided, and lots of yellow, red, and green lights. Never, never a blue light, always yellow, red, and green. This year I see, and the year before that I saw, I didn't see actual ships the year before that, but I saw a lot of movement in the sky, and I had these, like, presences coming to me all the time, and I'm a very spiritual person, but I knew that this was not something, you know, like God or angels. It was very odd, and finally I had to get to the point where I said, you don't have the right to be here, don't come back.
You got tough with them indeed. Well, Pamela, thank you, and we're at the top of the hour. The name of the book, of course, Covert Encounters in Washington, D.C. by Robert Stanley. His website linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. Always thanks, Robert. Up next, Sonia Barrett joins us. We'll talk about her work, The Holographic Canvas. It's a little bit about mind control and some other things on Coast to Coast AM.